Welcome to Parents Perspective. A leaf, a leaf, squealed 5-year-old Josh, pulling a large, thick magnolia leaf from a big brown envelope. His dad smiled. That's a pretty neat thing to get from the mailman. It's not from the mailman. Josh inspected the envelope and pulled out a big sheet of colored paper with printed letters on it. It's from Grandpa. Here's his letter. Josh's dad scanned the letter. Grandpa said you can put this leaf in your collection. What do you think? Super, beamed Josh. Can we call Grandpa now and tell him the leaf came? Sure, his dad grinned, glancing at the kitchen clock. But at Grandpa's house, it's not getting up time yet, so we'll set the timer for when he'll be awake. Then you can call and say thank you, too. Right, pal? From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help kids and adults maintain strong relationships long distance? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with Parents Perspective before. Alan Shedlin, founder and president of Real Fathers, is a freelance writer, educator, parenting coach, and national educational consultant. The former principal of the Ethical Culture School in New York City and founding director of the National Elementary School Center, Alan is an authority on parenting, education, and child-focused public policy. He's the father of 3 adult daughters and grandfather of 2 grandsons and 3 granddaughters, as well as 2 recently adopted grandsons on the Taos Pueblo in New Mexico, all ranging in age from 3.5 to 12.5. 3 grandchildren live 28.3 miles away. 2 live more than 2,000 miles away. Welcome back to Parents Perspective, Alan.
Thank you, Linda and Sandy.
What is the biggest challenge in being a long-distance relative, especially a long-distance grandparent?
The research that I've been doing over the last dozen years unequivocally shows that the single quality most desired by children— and I've interviewed children in 3 countries who are from 5 to 21 years old. What is the quality most desired for an excellent parent? And unequivocally, they say being there, really being there.
Of course, the problem is being there if you can't be there.
Exactly. So that being said, the biggest challenge of long-distance connections is how to, quote, really be there when you can't physically be there. How we meet that challenge will be different for each of us depending on a huge number of considerations and variables, such as the age of a child, the child's life stages, family history and circumstances, various cultures and traditions, availability of communication methods, such as technology or the postal service, et cetera, et cetera.
The technology part is tough for grandparents, isn't it?
It can be tough for most grandparents, including me. And the reasons for the distance, which I think we don't think often about. So some of the reasons could be, and not just for grandparents, but for parents too. What I'm thinking about is not only the, quote, reasons that we are most accustomed to, but what about all of the parents who are deployed, number one? And number two, what about all of the parents who are incarcerated?
Those
present a whole different set of circumstances and challenges.
What tools and techniques would you recommend specifically for keeping in touch? What things have worked best for you?
For me, my preferred mode is the telephone. And I've graduated. I used to use the tin can with the string in between, but I've now gone up to the link is difficult over 2,000 miles. So now I use the telephone. So I think that you may need to do some fact finding as you decide what's the best way for you. I would say something like, even though there is geographic distance between us, I want to stay connected with you.
Which works if the child is about 10 and above.
I think it works with kids much younger than that. And I have used it with my grandchildren, the ones who are much younger than that. And I think they get it. And they may get it on a different level than those who are 10 and above. You know, all of the research shows that kids understand much more than they have words to tell you that they understand. They get it. So What I would then say is I'd like to find out what works best for you. What are your preferences? What are the times? What are the methods that I should use for you? And I think of an anecdote of calling my 12-year-old granddaughter on her cell phone and having her not be there but have a message with some extraordinarily loud music. And it says, please enjoy the music while we locate your party. And what I want to scream out is, I'm not enjoying this music.
I'm not having a party.
Right, exactly. And when she gets on the phone, I'm always tempted to say something. So I just tune the music out as best I can, and then she's located. But it indicates some of the interesting, I think, dilemmas, especially for grandparents.
You talked about calling your granddaughter on her cell phone. Using the telephone very often means you're not calling the kid because the kid's too young to have a cell phone or doesn't have a cell phone. So you're calling the parents. So that means the parents have to be involved in this whole little dance about keeping in touch with the grandchildren at times when it may or may not be convenient for the parents. How do you work that?
There are so many variables that we don't necessarily consider beforehand. For instance, there also is a question about favoritism with different grandparents and jealousies, and that also needs to be explored and thought about. But you're right in pointing out the importance of coordinating this with your son or your daughter, the parent of your grandchildren. And it can be very, very complex because we are at a different stage of our lives as an adult, just as they are and their children are. And so if you haven't been an extremely involved parent and suddenly you're an involved grandparent, there are all sorts of issues that can come up around that as well. So it's very complicated. Some people have a set time that they call every week. And I was speaking to a friend who is a grandmother who does a lot of long-distance parenting. And she remembers that when her parents used to call her children, there was a time where they would say, oh, no, do we really need to speak to them again? So you need to work those kind of things out. And at some stage, the child might have loved having that phone call. And another stage, they might not have loved having that phone call because their lives are very complicated.
Is it better to say to the kids or say to your son or daughter, would you like to set up a time when you call us?
There are no simple answers and there are no simple formulas. It would be great if there were. And again, it's looking at a child at a different stage of their development and what works. You know, as my grandchildren, for instance, get a lot older, their lives are much busier and they have all sorts of activities outside of their school day that make it difficult sometimes to find them. And so what might have worked 5 years ago about calling at a certain time, maybe my granddaughter is on the soccer field at this point at that particular time. So when I talked about doing some fact-finding and finding out from the child and from the child's parents what's going to work, I think you need to be flexible and it could change over time.
And sometimes they have things they have to tell us about going on the potty.
Absolutely.
Or accomplishing something in school. They have to call at that time.
Yes, exactly.
And I have a grandson whose conversation is very clear in person and I have difficulty on the phone. But my son stands in the background and he says, what did you have for supper? And my little grandson will say, I had a sandwich and asparagus. And my son will say, he had a sandwich and asparagus. And I hear it in the background, so I know all the words very clearly. And then my little grandson says, and I had chocolate cake. Chocolate cake. And my son says, do you want to say why? My grandson says, I went on the potty. So those are important phone calls, and you have to drop everything to receive them sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on long-distance connections with family.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Alan Shedlin about long-distance connections with our families. Some kids are not telephone talkers. Mm-hmm. It's a strange instrument. There aren't people in there, and it doesn't make any sense. And the kids are not, even if they're very good conversationalists up close on the telephone, they're not very good.
One of the things that helps with that is this tool called Skype. You click on Skype, and then a little green light goes on, and suddenly I see a picture of myself, and then the phone rings, and I see my kids. And that's a wonderful tool because the kids then, instead of being on a telephone, they're just standing in front of their television talking to me. And I think that's a good tool if you can use it. Can't use it everywhere. Not everybody has those little contraptions.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant when I said you do some fact-finding and you talk to your kids, and you're absolutely right. There are times where some kids just don't want to talk on the telephone. And grandparents, I think in particular, need to understand that that's a possibility and not to be insulted when the mother or the father say, do you want to speak to grandma now or do you want to speak to gramps now? And they say, no, I don't.
That's right.
And so, you know, get over it.
There probably need to be different approaches for kids at different ages and stages. Do you have any specific suggestions for those?
Again, I think that it's really, really important to ask the child so that this is not something inflicted on them, if you will, by their parent. Grandma's on the phone now. Be polite. Talk to her. So instead, if you really have that conversation with your child after, again, reviewing with that child and saying again, and I think you can say it often enough, I really want to stay in touch with you even though I'm far away. I do care about you. I do love you. I do want to speak to you. What's going to work best for you? And then you review that. So I think that, again, you asked about a child's stage of development. And I love the story that you began with about the leaf being sent through the mail and the child recognizing the grandfather's handwriting and so forth. So, you know, it can be something simple like that. Before I came in today, I mailed a little note to one of my grandsons because I know he's getting an award at school on Wednesday and I cannot be there on Wednesday, but I got a heads up. So he will get something on Wednesday in the mail. And it's just something very, very simple saying congratulations on what you earned at school. And I know he'll recognize because I send these things from time to time. I know he'll recognize the handwriting on the envelope as well, plus the little decals that I put on it.
I know we mentioned that you have two adopted grandchildren who live in a pueblo in New Mexico, and that's a very different kind of communication, I would imagine. Some people have children and grandchildren who live in other countries or parts of countries where communication methods are very different. Do you want to comment a little on that?
I think the main thing to think about is the difference in cultures. These two Native American grandsons, who are 6 and 12, come from a culture that's somewhat different. And so one needs to also take into consideration, if they don't answer right away, not to be insulted by it. So you need to think about that kind of variable too. If you can share a common experience, either have read something together or seen a movie or a video together and have something that you can talk about that you've both done, that's a very helpful way to break the ice, so to speak.
We have a tradition in our family when our little grandson leaves, when he's been visiting or when we visit him. Afterwards, I try to collect the pictures that we've taken, and we put them in a little cheapo photo album with maybe 8 or 10 pages. And now that he's reading, I put little captions at the bottom so that he can read very simply what it is. But he's been collecting these over his whole lifetime so that some of the long-distance relatives that he really doesn't see very often, he can see and he can drag this around with him, and he opens it up and he sort of remembers his visits.
I think the children's favorite books are the little albums with pictures of family in them.
You said a word that I think is really, really important in addition to what a great idea that is, but the word is a tradition, and establishing a tradition and establishing rituals. And these are things that are very comforting to kids and they can count on. And it also, you know, one of the concepts that I think about often is that kids tend to have what I call a memory bank account. And it's really important for us to consider what are the deposits we want to make into that memory bank account, not knowing when the child is going to be making his withdrawals or her withdrawals from the bank account. But if we think about what are the memories, what are the assets that we want to put into that bank account, it's really helpful in guiding us.
What about email, Alan? Do you use email with the grandchildren?
I do use email with some of the grandchildren, those who are old enough to do it. I've also said, by the way, to my 12-year-old granddaughter who has decided that texting would be a good thing to do with me, is that that's something I don't yet do. I know what works with each one of them, and I will do that. Sometimes I will send an email to a younger one who doesn't have an email account to his mom or his dad for him.
Beyond just keeping in touch, what do you suggest for fostering and maintaining more in-depth relationships long distance?
Well, there are a number of things, again, going back to the initial comment that this is very complex and there are all sorts of variables. It would be wonderful in establishing traditions and establishing rituals if there was a said visit, if that's possible, each year. And the visit could be to that child or the visit could be from that child, depending upon the child's age. So that's another thing that you could do. Obviously, with the mention, as you did in the introduction, about my being the founder and president of Real Fathers, and Real is spelled R-E-E-L as in a movie reel, and what we do is we use the power of cinema to celebrate involved and loving fathers in particular and to heal, renew, and strengthen relationships. And we use the film as the vehicle to do that. And so certainly as we mentioned in terms of the different reasons for absence, whether it be if you're a deployed dad or a military dad or an incarcerated dad or mom, you can view a video together in your separate location and talk about it. If it's a young child, you can view a short video, maybe based on a children's book. You can read a book together. You can agree to volunteer together at some nonprofit organization, some charity, and you can either do it physically together or you can each choose one and then use that as a basis for discussion afterwards. Seems to me some common experiences that you have to go on and you can talk about together. That's another thing you can do.
The other thing that we really haven't talked about, but we've really sort of skirted it, was the adult-to-adult long-distance relationship. How can we make that relationship strong so that that, of course, feeds into a strong relationship with the younger ones?
I was thinking the other day about how my mother used to call me every single day at night, almost always in the middle of dinner. And she would say, "What's new?" And I would say, "Not much." And she would say, "How come nothing's ever new with you?" And I would say, "Because you don't allow any time for there to be anything new since you call every single day." There are all sorts of complicating factors, and it depends on what your history is with your own children. They also get complicated when they marry and have their own families because they're new variables, and it's what the spouse brings to the picture as well. And again, I think it's important to remember, you know, when we think about child development, we don't always think about adult development. We didn't stop developing when we became, quote, adults. We are still changing and we're still growing and we're still developing, and the same is so for each of those generations, for our children, for our grandchildren. And so it's constantly changing and constantly evolving. I would again say the same thing to an adult child. I far away, but I want to be, and it matters to me what you're doing and us being close to each other. So what's going to work for you? If my mom had said to me, you know, "Is it work for you that I call every night at dinner time?"
And of course, that would be helpful.
Yes,
that would be
easy to answer. And of course, at that point, I could have also said, you know, and I did set some limits about what times to call, and dinner time wasn't the best time to make that call. But, you know, I think you have to go with the flow.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on long-distance connections with family.
For an audio CD of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Alan Shedlin about long-distance connections with family. Alan, how can we actually give the child ownership of this process, and at what age? You've suggested frequently in our conversation, ask the child what works for you. I don't think my 2.5 and 3.5-year-old grandchildren would be able to tell me that. They would just want to hear my voice sometimes.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. Again, it's according to the child's stage of development, and at that point you might need to ask the child's mother or father what works. I've had this conversation about, Dad, don't be offended, Ellie's not a talker, on the telephone. And it's hard sometimes without the Skype to understand where that voice is coming from. You know, is it really on the telephone? And I've had a young child want to show me something on the telephone. And they need to be reminded that it doesn't work that way. I think that you have to figure out, we have to figure out, at what stage the child can accept ownership for it. And it might have to go for a period of time through the parents.
When my children went to college, there was no email until my youngest was in college. I think we really are fortunate that we have these various options open to us today, but we still have to make the effort.
And I think that in terms of making the effort, sometimes we immobilize ourselves by making it much too difficult for ourselves. So as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, just sending that little note, that took me 5 minutes to do. You know, it doesn't take a lot of time. Just writing an email saying, I'm thinking about you, that can be enough. Let's not make it so difficult for ourselves that we do nothing because we say we don't have the time to do it. I'm remembering one of the things that I did with a grandchild who was away at camp. And for every letter I sent her, I put in a self-addressed stamped envelope in return with also a message saying, just like you love to get mail from me, I love to get mail from you.
Yes.
And when I get this back, I'll send you another one.
Oh, boy.
And that's
pretty
an important
good
message. We had the experience years and years and years ago when my in-laws lived in Boston and then they moved to Florida. And I told my children to write them letters. And the two older boys could sit down and write a letter. And my mother-in-law would always mail them a dollar after she got the letter. So I kept telling them to write in the note, please don't send a dollar. Just wanted to write you a note. So they would draw pictures, they would write whatever, and the youngest one brings me something to put in an envelope, and I said, what does it say? Because, of course, it was not letters. It was squiggles and wiggles. And he said, it says, please don't send a dollar. Love, Aaron.
And I thought you were going to say that he said, please send
$5.
He would now, I think.
Inflation.
Right.
Well, of course, this conversation could go on and on because there are so many things to cover, but unfortunately, we have to close. So, Alan, before we do, what resources would you suggest for those listeners who want to further pursue some of the issues we've been addressing?
I don't know what I did before Google came along. I would Google all sorts of things like grandparenting, distant dads, staying in touch. And there are all sorts of sites out there, a click away, where you can find all sorts of great ideas about what to do. There are also specific magazines like Grandparenting, like Family Fun, which actually in the last issue had some suggestions about how to stay in touch. But I think that your most important resource is yourself and the person that you want to stay in touch with. And when I say yourself, I think about us asking ourselves, what is our life like, what is doable for us, and to think back to our own childhood as to what were the things that were comforting for us, that really pleased us, that we really didn't like, and try to factor that in how we stay in touch with our own distant family. And if you'd like to keep in touch with me and have some different ideas and share your experiences, you can contact me through my website at www.daddying.com or write to me at ashedlin@daddying.com.
Well, you certainly have helped us stay in touch with a lot of ideas that will be useful, we're sure, for listeners all over. So, Alan Shedlin, thank you so much for being with us today and talking about keeping in touch long distance.
And thank you very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 420 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programming. Parents' Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can mail checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.